You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Santuario di Europa.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney and I'm with Daniel Freed.
Hello, Lionel.
Good
Where
evening.
Are we?
We're in Biella, outside.
Home of Dario Frigo.
Dario Frigo, what a blast from the past.
What happened to Dario Frigo?
Famous for winning some bike races, getting caught up in a big doping scandal, jumping out of a hotel window during the Giro
and
one
supposedly,
year.
Supposedly, apparently, allegedly, now living under a different name.
Interesting.
In a different European country.
Should explain, he jumped out of a hotel bedroom window, allegedly,
did
to
he?
Avoid... Did he not?
In 2001 at the Giro, possible... There were riders who allegedly did that, but I'm not sure Frigo was one. Anyway.
Well, the myth, the legend grows taller. So now Dario Frigo definitely jumped out a window. I mean,
anyway, we've barely started and we're already off on a tangent.
We are. Well, should we stick to the Giro d'Italia 2017 then and recap stage 14? Just 131 kilometres from Castellania, Fausto Coppi's birthplace, to Europa. A three-man break got away. Basically, it was flat all the way to Biella and then up the climb to Europa. And the three-man break was Dimension Data's Bahane, Lagutin of Gazprom and Martinez of Villa Triestina. So far, so predictable. They were reeled in with 17.7 kilometres to go. And at that
good
point,
day for the shintometer. Low readings on the shintometer
yeah,
today.
I think Villa Triestina's Luca Shinto will be, he'll be quite satisfied with that today, won't he?
They won't. No fines for interviews in the last 10 kilometres, as far as we know.
No. Anyway, it was Trek who were leading the pace at the bottom, on the way to the bottom of the climb for Bauke Mollema, very well placed overall. Frances Dujour were there looking out for Thibaut Pinot. Movistar were there too. Sky's Diego Rosa attacked through the town and he was away for a little while, but with winner Anacona setting the pace, Movistar wheeled him back in. Igor Anton of Dimension Data tried an attack, but he was going nowhere fast. Zakarin made a move. By this stage, we were around about 4.5 kilometres to go. Bauke Mollema was beginning to suffer. Domenico Pozzovivo was the next to have a little dig, but then the real moves happened, and it was Nairo Quintana who dragged a couple of riders clear. It was Pozzovivo and Ilnur Zakarin who went away initially, and then it was just Quintana and Zakarin inside the final 4 kilometres. Tom Dumoulin, the pink jersey, was distant slightly, but then time trialled his way back, not only into contention, but back into a stage-winning position. Reeled in Quintana, and at the finish, he basically dropped him. And it was Zakarin who went on the very gentle cobblestones, pave at the top of Europa there. But Dumoulin went past him and won the stage and has basically had...
As predicted on the cycling podcast 24 hours ago.
Yeah, it was predicted. Yeah, well done, Daniel.
Is that the first one we've ever got right?
I think so.
Is that the first thing we've ever got right?
We should maybe have some kind of fanfare or siren to herald a successful prediction.
It was also a plagiarised prediction because Vincenzo Nibali made the prediction and I agreed with it. And Nibali was actually... quite triumphant tonight at having got it right as well, less so about his own performance, but anyway.
We'll hear about that in part three of tonight's episode, but just to recap, Tom Dumoulin, the big winner of the day, not just a stage win and the time bonus, but laid down a little bit of a marker and has certainly suggested that he's not going to be easily shifted from that pink jersey. If you look now at the GC, Dumoulin leads Quintana by 2:47. Molimar's slipped from third down to sixth. He lost 1:54. Pinot has moved up a place but lost time because obviously everyone lost time today. Nibali's moved up a place. Amador's gone down to tenth, but that was because of the work he was doing for Movistar. And the big winners of the day, really, other than Dumoulin, Kangert of Astana, who's gone up from ninth to seventh, and Ilnur Zakarin, who's gone up from tenth to fifth. Big move for the Russian. Dumoulin obviously in pink. He also now has the blue jersey as leader of the King of the Mountain, just ahead of Omar Fraile, but of course Fraile will wear that tomorrow. Bob Jungels is in white and Gaviria is in Chiclamino. But a day of an interesting day, a great race on Europa today, but it was ideal for Tom Dumoulin, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. We thought it would be because it was about a 30-minute effort or even less for the really steep, hard part of the climb, or steeper. I've got a bit of a peanut stuck in my throat line. I'm going to have to cough in a minute.
A Thibaut peanut.
Yeah.
I know I've just spilt beer all over my shorts.
It's been that kind of day, hasn't it, Lionel? It's been our first Jordan Atha knot of the Giro for reasons we might or might not go into later. Anyway, yeah, we see this quite often now. We see stages which are predominantly flat or very flat and finish with a climb that isn't that daunting on paper, and they cause an awful lot of damage because the speed does the damage, doesn't it? It's not the gradient that does the damage, it's the speed, and that applied to riders also who were going well at one point. You know, Quintana attacked and he launched what looked like it was going to be a decisive attack, but then he almost seemed to spin out. He didn't literally spin out, but he almost seemed to struggle with the pace towards the end of the climb, and really, really struggled in the last 500 metres.
Yeah, the attacks from Quintana, I mean, this is certainly not writing him off, because of all the stages to come, today is probably the one that favours him the least. He'll be much more at home when it's up, down all day, and the climbs are much harder. But he did look like a bit of an out-of-date firework today, and you know, he was obviously trying to make gains today because it's an uphill finish and that's what Quintana does, but he would not have expected to lose time. But the way that Dumoulin had judged his effort, and as it leveled out at the top, the pendulum swung back in his direction, didn't it? And it was another cool and impressive ride by Tom Dumoulin.
Yeah, and we've talked in this year about the virtual advantage that Tom Dumoulin holds over the climbers with that final time trial on the last day from Monza to Milan. It's 29 kilometres. He gained, in the first time trial, I think he gained 3 seconds a kilometre on Quintana, so that gives him a virtual advantage of around 5 minutes now, or even slightly more, for the mathematicians out there. And so
that sounds a lot, but he could lose that in a stage and a half.
Yeah, he could, but it's definitely at the point where Quintana is going to be alarmed. I mean, if Dumoulin doesn't collapse, then it's going to take more than one day. It's going to take two or three stages where Quintana makes serious inroads into Dumoulin's advantage. And it's not going to be easy. And Sunweb are also impressing me. They've got some very strong climbers in the team, Geschke, Preidler, and we went through it the other day. And for all that Movistar are also very strong on the climbs, there's a good vibe about Sunweb.
There really is, yeah. I was up at the finish, Daniel, and saw all the Sunweb riders come in, and they were obviously delighted. But there was an air of kind of confidence as well. I actually spoke to Georg Preidler, one of the climbing domestiques for Team Sunweb. Perhaps we'll hear from him now. How was today in the lead up to the climb? What was the fight for position like on the road before the climb started?
I was actually okay. It was a bit stressful, but that's normal. And I think we had a good approach into the climb. And Movistar tried to make it really hard already on the bottom, but they blow themselves up, and it was good for us. And we just stayed calm, and yeah.
And Tom is determined to ride these climbs totally at his own rhythm, and so far it's working perfectly.
Yeah, I think that's what he learned a few years ago in the Vuelta, to just pace himself. Don't look at the others, just look at his power, and he will come back always. He knows that.
And at the moment, neither Quintana has to worry about Tom rather than the other way around, maybe.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, he's proven now in two mountaintop finishes that he's climbing like Quintana, just a little bit less maybe. And he still has his weapon in Milano on the last time trial.
Are you looking that far ahead? Do you have a figure in mind of how much time Tom needs to be within the pink jersey before the time trial, or are you just going one day at a time?
Oh, we didn't think about that yet. We'll see after the rest day how it goes, and then we look day by day.
So Preidler not keen to speculate about the mathematics going forwards there.
Very much a man after your own heart, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's too early, isn't it? It's far too early. And really, Tom Dumoulin made the same point in the press conference this evening. He said that he knew this stage would suit him for just the reasons you were saying, Daniel. It was fast all day, and then carrying that momentum into the climb and being able to judge his effort over whatever it was, 30, 35 minutes, something like that. And he said he knew it well because Albert Timmer, one of his teammates, was in the all-day break where last time the race came here to Europa when Bataglin won the stage. And he said even just from watching on TV, he knew that it was the sort of climb that would suit him. And obviously, he was asked whether he can hold the pink jersey into the final week. And he made the point that, you know, so far, the race has suited him absolutely perfectly. There are now so many climbs coming. Tomorrow is tricky, but then Tuesday and Wednesday are enormous stages. I think basically we've done under a quarter of the serious climbs that are in the Giro in the first 2 weeks, and everything else is backloaded. And as we saw 2 years ago in the Vuelta, when Dumoulin took the red jersey in the final time trial, I think on stage 17, and then the likes of Fabio Aru, who eventually won the race, and Joaquim Rodriguez chipped away, and they chipped away, and they chipped away until Dumoulin went pop and then lost an awful lot of time and slipped away from the podium positions to sixth place overall. And we were talking, Daniel, as we were coming down off the climb in the car, that the chances are that Dumoulin will hang on and hang on, but then, you know, it's whether or not he goes pop. We won't necessarily lose little bits here and there, or will he? I mean, we just don't know.
Well, if he does, I mean, if he manages to sort of maintain his, you know, well, we talked the other day about TJ Van Garder and how, according to his power files in both the time trial and the climb to Blockhouse, you know, he'd produced about 550 watts up to a certain point in the climb, and then his watts had fallen off a cliff. And that's kind of what happens when a rider collapses. He goes from 550 to 500 or even less. And and those are the hallmarks of, not a bonk, but a collapse. And when that happens, that's when you lose minutes and minutes. If that doesn't happen, and Tom Dumoulin has shown all the signs of being quite aware of, or certainly sort of physiologically very self-aware, and he's riding in a manner that we've compared to Chris Froome, sort of not really paying too much attention to what the other riders are doing. I mean, even today, again, he was dropped at a certain point, wasn't alarmed, and seems to be riding to his own pace, to his own agenda. If he can maintain that, and if he can maintain, you know, who knows? We spoke to Iker Visbeek, the Sunweb Direct Sport Team, a few days ago, and I asked him, you know, is he riding to watts? Is that his strategy? Is there a number that he's riding to every day? And he said, well, no, but there is a little bit of that. And if he can carry on doing that, and even, you know, budgeting for 1 minute on the day when they go over the Stelvio and the Mortirolo, or Stelvio twice in effect, one day over the Big Dolomite, 1 minute over the Big Dolomite stage, and so forth and so forth, you know, he might be able to map out a sort of a plan that will take him to victory. And you know, as we've said on numerous occasions, he's come across very well. He's very cool. He seems to be taking it all in his stride, and you know, that all helps.
Yeah, I mean, he said he's learned a lot in the 2 years since that that sort of collapse at the Vuelta. A bit unkind to call it a collapse, but it was a rapid undoing on that penultimate stage of the race. He said he's learned a lot from being the leader of a race as well, not just there at the Vuelta 2 years ago, but at the Giro a year ago. And yeah, he looks relaxed. It looks like he's coping with it. But again, it's such a different kettle of fish, isn't it? Climbs that are going to take an hour plus, holding that power for that long. And it's much, you know, as much as he doesn't want to get sucked into a jumpy acceleration from Quintana and possibly Nibali and others, it's going to be a lot harder to do when it's not the final climb, isn't it? If people are going away from him a little bit on penultimate climbs of a stage and there's still a long way to go, that's when the panic sets in, that's when the pressure to keep up sets in, and that's when, you know, riders go into the red and can't claw it back.
Yeah, like you say, Lionel, the experience he had at the Giro last year was very different. Last year he was focused on the Olympic time trial, and he wasn't really going to win the Giro or to finish on the podium. He was going to ride GC for the first sort of week and a half. That was his goal, and sure enough, that's what happened. He was very high up on GC, wore the pink jersey, but then fell away, and he eventually pulled out of the race. So what he's attempting this year is very different. Also, with regards to the Vuelta 2 years ago when he did collapse, you say he has progressed a lot since then, or he's presumably progressed a lot and learned a lot. He needed to, because he did buckle slightly. He did capitulate slightly. In fact, Lionel, again, as if by magic, and we're going to hear a little bit from the coach at Sunweb, Mark Reef, about, well, this was him speaking to me. This is something we've dug out of the archives. He spoke to me last spring, revealed that although Giant, as they were, the team was known at the time, didn't communicate this at the time, Tom Dumoulin did get ill on the, I think, the last couple of days of that 2015 Vuelta, and there was perhaps a possibility that was brought about by the stress of leading the race.
Yeah, it was a surprise that he could do that for 3 weeks. That was a little bit of a surprise. Of course, we knew that he had huge possibilities as a rider. He showed already immediately from the moment that he came from the Neo category that he can compete on time trials with the best, and he's still making steps in it every year. In the first years, he had still problems with climbs. He could do it on a final climb when the stage was flat, and just one climb in the end. Then he could do high power, but when it was when there were more climbs during the day, then he got less and less, and then the last climb he was not able to do something. And with the years now that he had as a professional, he's also improving in that way. We're also not sure yet how far he can come. He was close to win the Vuelta last year, but also still far away. And we have to see that the coming years. We have to give him a few years still, I think, to see what kind of possibilities he will have. And if there is a possibility in general to go for a victory in the GC. I think on the end, a lot of factors were playing a role. It was the first time that he was in this position. Of course, a lot of attention came to him at that moment. He also there got a little bit. He don't want to speak about it because he don't want to make excuses for his performance there. But still, it was the case that he was also there the last weekend a bit sick. And of course, also pressure was playing a role, and like the other factors as well. It was a completely new situation, and in the end. After three weeks of racing, 3 weeks of hard racing, it was just one day too much. That's what we can say.
I'm Simon Mottram. I'm the founder and chief executive of RAFA. My ultimate rider, my hero, my anti-hero, I suppose, is Marco Pantani. The great thing for me about cycling is that it's an intensely human sport. It's all about the connection with the rider. Everything else just gets in the way. And Pantani was just the most compromised but amazingly inspirational human being, who was an anti-hero because he ended up dying from drugs. I don't love Marco Pantani because he committed suicide and he was a drug taker, and he was obviously a flawed character. I love him because he made me jump out of my seat when I was watching it on TV in the 90s and cheer and shout and go and look for the stories, and there aren't many athletes who do that. I think cycling has an amazing ability to throw up those people.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to RAFA for sponsoring the cycling podcast. A few things to mention about RAFA. The last of their weekend rides is tomorrow morning, Sunday morning, from Milan. If you want to go on that ride, rafa.cc/rides/Milan. The RAFA Milan pop-up store is open until the 27th of June, and it's on Via Fiori Chiara. Well, I think it's Via Fiori Chiari, actually. Also, just available is the Coppi flyweight jersey, inspired by Fausto Coppi's first massive win at Abatoni in 1940. And RAFA have also launched, just yesterday, I think, four T-shirts, Merino T-shirts, inspired by the mountains that we've got to come later on in the Giro. And they are, well, one actually inspired by today, features The Europa word across the chest looks very smart. Then there is also a Stelvio t-shirt, a Mortirolo t-shirt, and a Monte Grappa t-shirt. So again, Rafa.cc if any of those items interest you. Daniel, this morning we were hoping to get to Castellania, the tiny village where Fausto Coppi was born. I wanted to see Fausto Coppi's house, but it was all a bit of a shambles, wasn't it?
It was what's known in the trade as a goat. That doesn't mean, in the world of cycling journalism, that doesn't mean greatest of all time. It means
worst of all time.
It's the worst of all time. Casino, an absolute.
What was frustrating was we got there 3 hours early and still managed to make a pig's ear of it, didn't we?
Yeah, there was some sort of secret communique went round late last night in the small hours, about the buses having, the car park for the buses, team buses having changed, and you know we didn't get the memo, did we? It was a sorry old business, and I lost my microphone cover, which I'm very attached to, I'm very fond of. Got some coverage on social media yesterday.
Nicknamed Gianni Savio
because it bears a vague resemblance to the silver-haired silver fox manager of the Androni Giocattoli team.
Sad day all round.
So if anyone
really
found Gianni, then please, you know where to send it.
Well, it's going to be on that road that we walked up we walked quite a long way up a road and then we walked back down it again. But yeah, we made a bit of a mess at the start, but that happened.
Who's editing tonight? Who's producing tonight?
Tom Wally.
Tom Wally, can you insert some sad music here? Some maudlin, poignant music for the loss of Gianni Savio.
Daniel, should we evaluate some of the other riders who've moved up and down on the general classification? Because third place, the other Dutchman, Bauke Mollema, slipped away. If the climb suited Tom Dumoulin perfectly, perhaps didn't suit Bauke Mollema perfectly, because he's a bit more of a diesel, isn't he? He wouldn't perhaps have liked that fast entry into the climb and then the pressure being on all the way up.
No, and yet his team was pulling on the front and setting the pace, which never looks particularly good. It's always a little bit embarrassing when your team is taking control of the race and then you're the guy suffering further up the climb. But, you know, they might just have been positioning him and he might have felt that, well, I'm sure he did feel that his best chance of doing well on that climb was starting it at the front. Kruiswijk faded a little bit in the last kilometre. He's not had a particularly good first 2 weeks of the Giro. However, I think he's going to come good. I think he is a real diesel, and in the last two Giri, he's been very good, certainly up until last year. He was certainly very good until a couple of days before the end. And the previous year, he was excellent in the last week. So I think he's sort of moving up inside the rails.
Well, yeah, Kruiswijk took the pink jersey on this equivalent day at Corvada last year and held it until he crashed into that ice wall, didn't he? But, I mean, his limit is probably looking at the top five. We're not going to go much further up than that, I wouldn't have thought. But one man who now could possibly eye the podium is Ilnur Zakarin, who has moved up from 10th to 5th. It's always a bit strange because everybody's lost time. He's actually further away from the pink jersey in terms of time than he was this morning. He lost 7 seconds to Dumoulin once all the time bonuses are factored in and all of that. But he's moved up to 5th. He's leapfrogged a few people. And when you consider that at Blockhouse, he lost 2 minutes 14 to Quintana, that was a real, you know, dot day for him, wasn't it? Didn't go for him at all well. And we were expecting him to ride well there. Perhaps he's another one who will come on and have a good final week.
Yeah, having said that, Lionel, I think that today's climb probably suited him. It was one for the sort of rangy, powerful climbers like Dumoulin, like Zakarin, might struggle a little bit more, particularly on the big Dolomite stage, finishing in Ortizé, isn't it? And also the climb over the stage going over the Stelvio. But who knows? Who knows?
What about Thibaut Pinot then? Because another one who, you know, I wasn't sure whether this would suit him or not. Daniel, you were saying that perhaps this wasn't the sort of climb that he would like. So, in which case, not a bad result. Lost 45 seconds to Dumoulin today, but is now third overall. And looking okay, I think. Limited his losses once he'd been distanced and didn't panic. Certainly didn't blow up. Didn't have a complete disaster. And just rode in and didn't do himself any more damage.
No, and I think, you know, we talked then about how riders can collapse. And if you look back at Pino's career, on all of the occasions when he hasn't absolutely capitulated, he's generally done very well in Grand Tours. And today was by no means a capitulation. There might have been a moment where he panicked or felt that he was losing it. And he regrouped and came back pretty well and was making up positions in the last couple of kilometres. And today was definitely not a climb that suited Pino. Doesn't like it when it's fast going into the bottom of climbs. Again, it was a fairly warm day. We've talked previously about his dislike for the hot weather, and he himself has made no secret of that. It's been hot every day on the Giro, or at least, you know, hot by
Giro standards.
Giro standards. So I think he can look forward to the last week with renewed optimism. How many guys could win this race now? I think Pino is definitely someone who could still win it.
Yeah, I think, I think Dumoulin, Quintana, Pino and Nibali, it's starting to look like that. We'll talk all about Nibali in the final part. I think the race for the podium, or the race for the top step on the podium, is limited to those four now. But there's a lot of people who might fancy their chances of climbing up to third place if they have a fantastic final week and a few people go pop ahead of them. One of those riders, I think, Adam Yates. I mean, it wasn't a wonderful result for him today. He lost 51 seconds to Dumoulin and was just off the back of that group coming into the final couple of kilometres. But he's moved up a couple of places. He's now 13th. I think there are some vulnerable-looking people ahead of him when it gets really serious in the mountains. Rui Costa is now behind him. Formolo is now behind him. I think he's got Cataldo in his sights. I think he can probably aim at Jungels, possibly even Pozzovivo and Kanga, you know, as soon as we get into the big, big mountains on Tuesday and Wednesday. And then once he's into the top five or six, all going well, then he could look at the top three. It's not out of the question still.
Yeah, and I think he's certainly very interested in the white jersey and very interested in overtaking Bob Jungels in that competition.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science is part, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Reminder that if you go to scienceinsport.com, you can get 20% off all of their products by entering the code CPOD20. That's CPOD20. There's also an incredible competition. I'll list all the prize, all the items up for grabs here. There's a pair of Oakley Duro sunglasses that you can't buy. Only pro riders have them, so they're pretty much unique to us mere mortals. And a Wahoo Kicker smart trainer. And a year's supply of Science in Sport and Muckoff products. And a signed Team Sky 2017 jersey. There are also second and third place prizes worth £1,000 and £500 up for grabs. Now, to enter this competition, you need to go to scienceinsport.com/thecyclingpodcast. Now, I've been inundated with messages from, I hesitate to call them tech nerds, saying that I said that it's /thecyclingpodcast. So, and I'm reliably informed that it's a forward slash. It's the one that goes, so if you're looking at the profile of a mountain stage, it's the climb, not the descent. But I mean, if you're handwriting a web address, you would the stroke would go backwards. So I just thought it was a backslash. Anyway, people have been struggling to get on the website. I mean, you just use your initiative. If it doesn't work one way, try the other way.
Well, it's a good job you're leaving on Monday. But you're going to get hounded out of the podcast.
It just shows you just how popular that competition is, because that's a fantastic prize. Anyway, let's move on to the one man we haven't really mentioned, and the one man we certainly should mention, the defending champion Vincenzo Nibali of Bardet-Merida. What was the reaction from Nibali's team and from Nibali himself, Daniel? Because you were down at the Bardet-Merida bus, weren't you?
Yeah, Ciro, our good friend Ciro Scognamiglio, who we'll probably have on the podcast tomorrow from La Gazzetta dello Sport. We spent the afternoon basking like a pair of lizards in the sun halfway down the climb off a little slip road, a secret little slip road where all the team buses were parked, or some of the team buses. The logistics were very, very challenging today. So we waited there. We watched Nibali get dropped in the finale, and then it's come back and then look as though he was struggling again, and Nibali came into the team bus and went upstairs, and he sort of kept his own counsel for 20 minutes or so while he had a shower and gathered his thoughts. And his teammates were coming in, his Bahrain Merida teammates were coming in. They weren't sure how he'd done. Valerio Agnoli was asking us for results, and we said, well, we think he lost 40-odd seconds.
Yeah,
and
he was seventh, 43 seconds behind him.
Yeah, and Agnoli kind of grimaced and suggesting that wasn't a very good result. And then Visconti came in slightly before Agnoli, and he said that he thought Dumoulin, well, he said it was ridiculous the pace that Dumoulin was going and that he wouldn't be able to sustain that. And Visconti was quite confident that Dumoulin's going to blow up. And then finally, Nibali appeared on the steps of the team bus, and he delivered his verdict on his own performance, and this is what he said.
I don't know.
I feel really good, but I couldn't do much more. Dumoulin accelerated gradually, but at a very high pace. He even asked me to come through once or twice, but I could only follow. He then accelerated and went after Quintana, which was when we all started popping. I've just heard what they've said on TV. Dumoulin was 10 seconds slower than Pantani on the climb. We're talking about a VAM of nearly 1850. That's incredibly high. I don't know what else to say. Obviously, this isn't a climb that's particularly well suited to me, but it didn't go too well all the same. I need to look forward, although yes, the gap's getting pretty wide to Dumoulin.
I have to say, Daniel, that did surprise me. Somebody in the press conference said that Dumoulin covered the last 6 kilometres of the climb, only 10 seconds slower than Marco Pantani in 1999. And obviously that is a comparison that's loaded with all kinds of, not innuendo towards Tom Dumoulin, but just certainly one of those things that raises eyebrows, doesn't it? Because Pantani was less than a week away from being expelled from the race for having a sky-high hematocrit.
And that was the last 6 kilometres. Is that what they were talking about, Lionel?
Yeah.
Because, of course, Pantani stopped at 8.5 kilometres to go to put his chain back on, which had dropped. And actually, I suppose you could say that in this case the comparison was valid to a point, in the sense that I think the stage was relatively similar and it came at a relatively similar point of the race, towards the end of the second week. And the weather was similar. It was a hot day that day in 1999 as well. However, it's almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, these people get very sort of agitated by these kind of comparisons, and understandably so, because of the era we're talking about. But last year, I happened to be at the UK base of the Bianchi distributors, and they had Marco Pantani's 1999 bike in the office there, and I was surprised by just how heavy it was compared to, you know, bikes now. I mean, I can't give any figures now, but just was really surprised. It's chunky and much, much heavier bike than the types of bikes that, you know, even the likes of me ride now. So there's, you know, there's that. And I think there's also a lot to be said about the way that riders know their capabilities much more. They know exactly what they're able to produce over particular times, you know, I'm talking about, you know, 10 minute effort, 20 minute effort, 30 minute effort, and therefore they're able to judge when they're approaching the red. And the thing about climbing on, you know, any climb, whether it's this climb or the Stelvio or the Mortirolo, it's when you've gone into the red, it's almost impossible to sort of rein it back in and recover. Because by the time you've done that, you've lost minutes, you've lost, as you say, Daniel, you know, a lot of watts, a lot of momentum. And so it just, the job is almost keeping below the point where you tip over and start to cause yourself any kind of damage and risk blowing up.
Well, that's what it's all going to be about for Dumoulin, isn't it, over the last week. But interesting to hear Nibali say that he thought he felt really good, and he's felt really good in this whole Giro. And that's kind of the impression that we've got, that he's been riding a good Giro, certainly compared to the last couple of Grand Tours that he's ridden. And there were some crumbs of comfort for him. He was disappointed, but a bit of a consolation, Molinar blew up today, and I put it to him that it might be that kind of Giro where one of the contenders sort of falls by the wayside every day, and it's going to be a question of the last man standing. Here's what he said.
I don't know if guys are just going to keep falling away.
It's a very hard Giro. This week was odd. We did a time trial, which went okay for me. Then we had quite a hard stage that was very up and down, but couldn't really separate the GC contenders. After that, we had two sprint stages, one short, one long.
and today a short stage with a single abrupt climb at the end that was very well suited to Dumoulin. That's why I said yesterday that he was the favourite. At least I got that right. He's a time trialist. He knows how to ride for a long time with lactic acid in his legs, and he showed that today. He finds his rhythm and just stays there, which is enough to make the difference at the moment. That said, the coming week will be a bit harder with lots of climbs, so we'll have to wait and see.
Well, Daniel, if your hypothesis is correct and it's a case of people falling away one by one, that would kind of mirror last year's Giro, because Nibali was patient. He made those had those two fantastic stages right at the end where he kind of picked off first Kruiswijk and then Chavez and came through and won the pink jersey when all had appeared completely lost only 3-4 days before. And, you know, he's certainly not out of it, is he? I mean, it looks like a big gap, 3:40 to Dumoulin, particularly with the time trial. But, you know, if Dumoulin falls by the wayside, then the gap to Quintana is under a minute. And that's certainly manageable.
It is, Lionel, and we all know about Nibali's descending prowess, and there are a few descents in the last week that I'm sure he'll be sort of salivating at the prospect of, off the Stelvio in particular, off the Mortirolo. Remember, we're not going up the steep side of the Mortirolo, but we're coming down a very steep side of the Mortirolo. And, you know, those descents aren't necessarily in the most sort of opportune positions for an attack, but Nibali is a rider who won't lie down. He won't just sort of economize and protect a podium position. He's come here to win. His Palmares is all already sort of fully formed. He doesn't need anything really to enhance his legacy or reputation or whatever. So I think he will throw the proverbial kitchen sink at it. And somewhere along the way, I mean, asked him about tomorrow's stage at Bergamo. Couple of climbs in the finale are finished, the riders will go over the little climb into Bergamo Alta, High Bergamo, and then come down the other side, very similar to a finish we've had on many occasions at the Tour of Lombardy. Nibali said that he thought that Movistar might try to isolate Dumoulin tomorrow. Don't know whether he was being cagey and Bahrain Merida are planning something. I would suggest that tomorrow is probably not the place to really go for the jugular. I think even a very successful manoeuvre tomorrow could see a team or a rider gain 30 seconds or a minute, and it might not necessarily be worth it. Whereas in some of the mountain stages next week, if you did manage to isolate Dumoulin and really weaken his team, I think you'd be talking in terms of 2 or 3 or 4 minute gains. So I think really Nibali will be looking at one big kind of coup, and that has to be on one of the big stages next week.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think that's a dangerous game to play as well, because Dumoulin's advantage is such that if he stands firm on one of those two big days, suddenly the pressure ramps up on Wednesday's stage, doesn't it? And then the opportunities become less significant. And this is still the time trial to come. Remember, they've not going to just knock him out of pink. They've got to knock him out of pink and get a good buffer for the time trial. And that's going to be tricky. And so if they just kind of, you know, take tomorrow as they don't pile the pressure on too much, we could be looking back at the end of the Giro and thinking, well, that was a mistake to give some web an easy-ish ride through the Lombardy stage.
Anyway, Lionel, I'm looking forward to eating polenta in Bergamo tomorrow. Bergamo, not really the home of polenta, but famous for its polenta. In fact, the people of the north, the people of the south call the people of the north of Italy polentoni, like literally big polentas. Big polentas.
I've never been mad on polenta.
I love polenta.
Say, really? Is it not just a bit bland?
No, it's great. It's, you know, it's a lot, very cheesy.
Okay.
Well, you really have to eat it in Bergamo tomorrow night.
Okay. So is tonight risotto? We came through
tonight,
risotto rice fields.
We're committed to a risotto tonight, aren't we? We came through a lot of paddy fields today in the Piedmont region, famous for its rice. We were stopped at a service station on the route today, and Ivan Basso was there, the blueberry farmer. And we happened to notice they were selling Amica chips crisps. And Ivan Basso rode for Amica chips in 2000. And we thought that we might do the kind of the Grand Slam, the
Amica Chips, Riso Scotti. Riso Scotti was one of his other teams.
Yeah, well,
Riso
Scotti was his first team as a professional. Amica Chips was his second. We thought them Italian service stations sell all sorts of like local delicacies and local produce, and we thought there'd probably be some Riso Scotti risotto rice in there and Amica Chips crisps. Unfortunately, it was only the crisps.
And then a big CSC in, you know, IT services desk at the end of the...
And some Fassa Bortolo concrete admix or whatever you call it. But yeah, these are the kind of things that keep us amused.
We also saw, I don't know what they were, sweets? Fonzie's sweets in honour of Fonzie. Did Fonzie finish today? That was the question. I've only got page one of the results here. I can't even answer the question.
Of course he did.
He'll be last though. I bet he was last. We'll find out an update tomorrow on how Fonzie's doing. But for now, we should probably say farewell to all our listeners, and we will be back tomorrow night, Sunday night, after the Stage de Bergamo, and we will update on what has happened then. And until then, thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you, Lionel.
A reminder that you can watch the Giro d'Italia live and exclusive on Eurosport and Eurosport Player. UK viewers can also watch highlights of each stage at 10 p.m. on free-to-air channel Quest. There's a special offer for the Eurosport Player, £29.99 for an all-access pass for the rest of 2017. Details of availability, compatible devices and full terms and conditions can be found on the Eurosport Player website, uk.eurosportplayer.com. You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. Thanks to them, and thanks to our other sponsors, Science and Sport and Maserati, and to All Press Espresso for supporting our morning show, Kilometre Zero. The music in this episode is by Amara Terra. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who help keep us on the road, in particular David Luxton, Jonathan Rowe, Nick Christian and Simon Gill. And thanks to Tom Wallen for producing this episode.